This is the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. The St. Louis Jewish Book Festival is underway, and one of the events that I think is going to be one of the best things that they do is going to be a baseball panel that will include people like Kostya Kennedy from Sports Illustrated, who's written a book about Pete Rose, and my next guest. His name is Al Clark, who for 25 years was an umpire in Major League Baseball, part of what he calls the third team on the field. He's written about his career in a new book called Called Out, But Safe, A Baseball Umpire's Journey. He will be at that St. Louis Jewish Book Festival panel on Wednesday night, November 12th at 7:30 p.m., and joins me now here on the Big 550 KTRS. Hi, Al.
Paul, how are you, sir?
I'm doing wonderfully, thank you. Let's go right to the title, Called Out, But Safe. How many times did that happen in the 3,000 or so games that you called?
Well, there were a lot of guys that called out. There were some that were called safe. But the title actually is has something to do with my life and the great career that I had in baseball and some of life's turns that took place after I was out of baseball.
Yeah, I should mention that in 2001, you were fired by Major League Baseball because there were questions about some tickets that you were given, which were first-class tickets, and you had downgraded them to economy-class tickets, and I got involved in a whole thing there, and then later on, there were some mail fraud charges, and you actually did, what was it, 4 months in jail for that?
I did. I spent 4 months in a minimum security federal institution, learned a lot about myself, learned a lot about humility. The situation that I was given my release from in baseball terms, or in real life fired from Major League Baseball, had to do with airplane tickets, but nobody seems to get that right. What I did was absolutely legal, in accordance with the collective bargaining agreement, and also there was nothing against the law of what I did. The mistake that I made was not calling the Major League Baseball office, the commissioner's office, and telling them what I did, and therefore they chose to release me from my contract to fire me. And that's the truth of the matter, and I've outlined it all in the book, along with so many other things that I was eyewitness to over 26 years in the big leagues.
Sorry, 26. 3,000 or more Major League Baseball games, including 2 World Series, 7 playoff series, 2 All-Star games, and you were also the first Jewish umpire in the history of the American League. And I say it that way because at the time, the American League had umpires, and the National League had umpires, and the two did not cross, correct?
That is absolutely correct, Paul. That's why I'm the answer to a trivia question that will live forever. I am the first and only ever Jewish umpire hired by the American League. In 1999, we cross-pollinated, so to speak. There were no longer American nor National League umpires, but rather Major League umpires. Instead of just going to American League cities or National League cities, umpires went to all 30 cities.
What was the difference?
Oh, there wasn't a whole lot of difference. It was more in the writers' and broadcasters' imagination than it was actually on the field. A long time ago, American League umpires wore an outside chest protector. National League guys wore an inside chest protector. But in 1976, a long time ago, the American League started to grandfather out the outside protector. By the time, you know, we got to around to 1999, everyone was wearing an inside chest protector. And literally, the only other difference was on the foul lines, the American League umpires would stand and position themselves in foul territory, and the National League guys would straddle the line. And other than that, there was not a whole lot of difference. It was in the writers' and broadcasters' imagination.
Yeah, because baseball is baseball, wherever you're playing it.
Absolutely right.
Now, let's talk about some of the things that you witnessed and were actually right in the midst of. And one of the most famous just had its quarter-century anniversary 3 weeks ago. On October 17th, 1989, many of us will remember watching Game 3 of the World Series between the San Francisco Giants and the Oakland A's at Candlestick Park. And we were watching the pregame show with, I believe it was Al Michaels and Tim McCarver, and it was suddenly interrupted, and the signal dropped out because there was a 6.9 earthquake, the Loma Prieta earthquake, that knocked the broadcast off the air and shook up the Bay Area big time. You were there, weren't you?
I certainly was. I was in the dressing room at Old Candlestick Park, and we were getting ready to walk on the field. We were about a half an hour away from game time. It happened at 5:04 on October 17th, 1989. That's a time and date that's kind of stamped in my mind and will be forever. And we looked at each other as we heard a locomotive sound, you know, coming through the stadium, and we literally said to each other, "What the?" And all of a sudden we realized, of course, it was an earthquake, a substantial earthquake. The walls in Candlestick Park, Paul, are cinder block, and they didn't shake. They actually waved. And at that time, we realized that we better get out of this cement building, this cinder block building. And I ran out onto the field. I had long johns on and shower shoes and a T-shirt. And don't you know, as soon as I walked out onto the field, there was a Sports Illustrated photographer there, and he took a shot of that, and of course that was in the editions the next week.
Yep.
But we were out there quickly enough to see the wave actually come through the stadium.
Wow.
And the top deck of Candlestick Park spring forward and snap back. It was just an amazing sight. If you remember correctly, Paul, the Oakland A's had won the first two games over in Oakland. This was the first game in San Francisco. And the people in San Francisco, of course, you know, being a part of earthquakes and movements forever, they thought initially that, boy, this is just what we needed to shake up the series and get us going. And everybody started actually applauding. But when in reality, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, all the traffic helicopters were in the air, and there were no cell phones or anything but transistor televisions. And at that time, within 4 or 5 minutes, everyone knew that the seriousness of the quake, where the Nimitz Freeway in Oakland had pancaked, a portion of the Bay Bridge had collapsed, the Mission District in San Francisco was on fire. And then, of course, all the police cars came onto the field in San Francisco, and the series was postponed. Ultimately for 10 days.
Now, were you the crew chief that night?
No, Richie Garcia was.
Okay, so you run out, you're in your long johns and your whatever footwear you had on.
Yeah.
And at some point, do you go back in, get dressed, and you and Richie and the other umpires huddle together and say, okay, well, we got to develop a plan? Or is it out of your hands by that point?
Well, at that point, it was completely out of our hands. Commissioner Faye Vincent was there, of course, and He was magnificent, probably the best decisions that he's made. We postponed that game, or they postponed that game right away, of course. And Faye was pressured, a lot of pressure, to take the series to a neutral site, like maybe Phoenix or something like that, to complete the series as quickly as possible. Faye, in his wisdom, acted in the best interests of baseball, a term that you don't hear very often anymore.
Yep.
And he decided that no matter how long it would take, the Bay Area deserved this World Series, and we would wait, and then baseball would work as a catalyst to just show everyone that we're back to normal. And it took 10 days, and even though the intensity of this series was no longer there, baseball did work as a catalyst, and it helped to get the whole Bay Area back to some sort of normalcy. And I think Faye's decision there was just of paramount importance.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it didn't work out so well for the Giants in the long run. The A's ended up winning the series pretty quickly.
In four straight, that's right.
Yeah. So once you got dressed and you know, you're milling around and the commissioner makes that decision, then what do you do?
Well, I was staying still in Oakland. I decided not to move over to San Francisco. And I couldn't get back because they had closed the San Mateo Bridge. The Bay Bridge, of course, was closed. And I was just going to stay at the stadium all night long. Of course, there was security at the stadium. And in the umpire's room, there was a couch. I was going to sleep on the couch. There was food and water and everything. So, I had no qualms about staying at the ballpark. But then about 11:30 that night, they did open the San Mateo Bridge after it was checked out. And I did go back over to Oakland and stayed there for a couple of days, and then came into San Francisco and saw some of the damage and that kind of stuff.
It's Paul Harris talking with Al Clark about his book called Out But Safe, A Baseball Umpire's Journey. That's just one of the historic moments that you were a part of. Let's pick another one that you write about a little bit in the book here. You were at Camden Yards when Cal Ripken broke Lou Gehrig's record, right?
Paul, it was one of the most magnificent occurrences that you could ever imagine in baseball. And a couple of things were occurring to make it such. Number one, if you remember correctly, the World Series had been canceled the year before, and baseball was in a terrible spot with biorhythms really low because of PEDs and steroids. Cal Ripken just edified everything that was positive and good. It was a good work ethic. Cal did everything correct and right with all the fans in baseball. I remember being in Kansas City, and he, after a ball game, the Orioles were there, and during the streak, he literally stood outside for an hour and a half after the ball game, signing autographs on the field as people came down and you know, just to be a part of him. And what he did and how he did it was so full of class and professionalism. And to be a part of that, not only those couple of nights, but to be in Baltimore that week was absolute magic. And it just was wonderful to be a part of our game during that time. And that was the catalyst that, that helped bring baseball back to where it is today. And I'm proud to have been a part of it.
Of course, we can't talk about the Orioles without talking about their feisty manager, Earl Weaver, who just loved to get out there and get face-to-face with umpires. He and Billy Martin and a few others almost made careers out of that. What was it like from your side of the mask?
Well, you know, those guys, they created situations that were just part of the game. They were irascible type people. Earl was like an itch in the middle of your back, that it was always there and you couldn't quite reach it. Billy just tried to intimidate a lot of young umpires, not necessarily for this call, but perhaps the next one. Dick Weaver was just a pain in the butt every day that he walked out on the field. I don't know how, you know, the coffee that he drank in the morning must have been bad, bad stuff. Frank Robinson, we just didn't get along. I mean, that was just a, you know, oil and water type situation. And just like you going to work or anyone going to work, the baseball field has people that you're going to like and get along with and people that, you know, that aren't going to like you and that you're not going to get along with.
So when you would see Earl coming out of the dugout to argue something, would you go, oh, here we go again?
Well, you know, it kind of depended on the situation in the game and what the score was. And you could tell right away if Earl and others wanted to be ejected immediately or if they just had a legitimate question or beef, they would attack things differently. If they had nothing to say or nothing intelligent to go on, they would be irascible and yelling and being full of verve and histrionics. And if they had something intelligent to say or they are questioning something legitimately, they would come out and they would talk and they would try and get their point across. Of course, they never won, but it was just part of the magic of being out there on the field with these guys.
So you never changed the call because an umpire was breathing straight down your nose?
No, not even close. My goodness gracious.
So what do you think about instant replay in Major League Baseball now, and would you have liked to have had it then?
Paul, that's a great question, and I've got a little different take on it than perhaps others. I think because of the high-definition technology that is upon us, I think that it's going to be a part of raising the efficiency of Major League umpires to a standard it's never enjoyed before. I think the older guys, the more respected guys, are going to accept it. I mean, let's face it, it's not going away. And because they're going to accept it, their level of concentration is going to be even a tad higher than what it is now, if that's possible. Their timing is going to get better. The younger guys are going to see that the older guys are embracing it, and it's going to raise their level of competency. I think that, like a rising tide raises all ships, I think all the umpires are going to get on board, and it's going to literally create better umpiring, which in turn will create a better game for everyone concerned, including the fans.
We mentioned that you were an American League only umpire from 1976 until 1999, but then you still had a couple more years in the game after that. which meant that you eventually probably got to come here to one of America's great baseball cities, if not the greatest, St. Louis.
Paul, you are so right. I embraced and I loved coming to St. Louis. What a wonderful city you've got. And I said that literally St. Louis is one of the top three baseball cities in our country, with St. Louis being up at the top, Detroit and Boston being the others. What convinced me of that was one Sunday morning while working in St. Louis. Sunday, the ball game started at 1 o'clock or so Sunday afternoon, and everyone came to the ballpark, filling the ballpark in Cardinal red from church.
Yep.
And my goodness gracious, if that isn't part of it, and not only that, not only are they great baseball fans, they're knowledgeable baseball fans.
Mm-hmm.
They love their Cardinals. It's kind of like in Baltimore, the people in Baltimore love their Orioles. And my goodness, you can't say or do anything bad to or about the Cardinals the same as you can't do anything bad or say anything bad about the Orioles.
Last question I have for you, Al. Who is harder on umpires, Major League Baseball fans or Little League parents?
Oh, without a doubt, the Little League parents. My goodness gracious, Paul. I don't know what I don't think I could have spent 26 years on a Little League field. The fans you can control and everything. The parents are uncontrollable.
Yep. Well, I know that the St. Louis Cardinal fans and other baseball fans here in town are going to greet you nicely when you come for the St. Louis Jewish Book Festival, mostly because your name's not Don Denkinger. The event will be on Wednesday night, November 12th at 7:30 p.m. at the St. Louis Jewish Book Festival. You can go online and find out more. Al's book is called Called Out But Safe, A Baseball Umpire's Journey. Al Clark, what a pleasure to talk to you.
Paul, it's my pleasure. I look forward to seeing you next week.
I am Paul Harris. This is the Big 550.